This is the SCLO Library Podcast. Today we are talking about the graphic novel memoir King of Kingquart by Travis Dandreau. This book is the winner of the Pennsylvania Center for the Book's Lynn Ward Graphic Novel Prize. We're joined by members of the judging panel who awarded this prize and by Alyssa Cahoy, who is an education librarian for Penn State and assistant director for the Pennsylvania Center for the Book. Also joining us from Penn State is doctoral candidate in comparative literature, Irene Agbedian, assistant professor of language and literacy education, Jason Griffith, and doctoral candidate in curriculum and instruction in women's gender and sexuality studies, Colette Slagle. Guys, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Ben.
Alyssa, could you talk a bit about the Pennsylvania Center for the Book in general, and specifically the Lynn Ward Graphic Novel Prize?
Sure, I would be happy to. So Ben, the Pennsylvania Center for the Book is an organization that is housed within the Penn State University Libraries at University Park, but it's actually a part of the Library of Congress. The Library of Congress in Washington, D.C. houses the Center for the Book, the National Center for the Book, and it also sort of oversees all the different state centers for the book. Each state has their own center. And so we have the Pennsylvania Center for the Book here at Penn State. And our mission is to study, honor, celebrate, and promote books, reading, libraries, and literacy to the citizens and residents of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And so we have a lot of different programs and awards that are all geared toward that mission. And one of them is the Lynn Ward Graphic Novel Prize, where we really want to celebrate and promote the development of the graphic novel and identify awesome graphic novels for you know, readers of all ages, primarily with this award adults, but for readers to enjoy each year. So to give you a little bit of background on the Lynn Ward Graphic Novel Prize, that award is sponsored by the Penn State Libraries, and the Pennsylvania Center for the Book administers it. And it is given each year to the best graphic novel, either fiction or nonfiction, published in the previous calendar year by a living U.S. or Canadian citizen or resident. And we always announce the award in the spring. And so we're going to talk about this spring's award winner. And we present the award in the fall. And to give you a little bit of history on the award is named after Lynn Ward, who himself is a graphic novelist or was a graphic novelist. And he was really someone who was very influential in the development of the graphic novel as a genre. And the Penn State Libraries actually have an extensive collection of Lynn Ward's wood engravings and his original book illustrations and lots of other amazing graphic art. And these works were donated to the Penn State Libraries by his daughters, Robin Ward Savage and Nanda Whedon Ward. And so we wanted to celebrate Lynn Ward's impact on the graphic novel by naming this award after him. And his daughters have also very generously supported this award. So since 2011, we have given out this award annually. And this is an unusual year for us because we're not having our award ceremony in person this year. We'll be having it online via video, but we always have our winner give an acceptance speech and typically come to State College to get the award. And it's one of the events that we look most forward to every year.
Is there a way listeners could see the presentation?
If you Google Pennsylvania Center for the Book, you're going to come to our website. And as soon as we have that video presentation available, it'll probably be sometime in October. We will link it right on the front page of our website.
Excellent. If people wanted to see part of the collections of Lynn Ward, would that be in the special collections?
You got it. That's exactly right. That's where they are. They're in the Special Collections Library. You know, again, due to our current situation, Special Collections is not open in the same way that it normally would be, but during regular times, you'd be able to come in and access those collections during any of the regular hours.
All right. So the winner of the Lynn Ward Prize that we're discussing today is King of Kingquart by Travis Dandreau. For listeners who may not have read this, what is a brief synopsis of this memoir?
Yeah, I'll start, and then Colette and Irene, feel free to fill in the blanks. I think it's basically two major parts of Dandreau's childhood, one in his elementary school years and then a flash forward to his high school years. So two distinct parts of his sort of coming of age with various relationships with adults, but mostly with his biological father, Dad Dave, who struggles with drug addiction based on some mental demons he's battling from his past, and the various ways that that sort of invades all different parts of the family life, but specifically his relationship with Dandro and Dandro's choices in terms of what type of person he wants to become, how he sort of has to take the reins on his own upbringing in some ways to sort of navigate towards and away different familial influences in the face of that drug abuse, which transitions in some ways into physical abuse.
So what is it about King of King Court that is noteworthy as a literary work?
I could talk about some of the things I found noteworthy. I'd say that what really struck me was the way that Dandro manages to slow down the pace of his narrative and allow us to really sink into the world that he's recreating from memory. I personally love the way that the text presents the family as complex and flawed, without managing to villainize one particular member. And throughout this narrative, you can constantly feel anger, hurt, betrayal. You can feel confusion. You can see a child's naivete. But there's also this basis for happiness. There's space for creation. Then going back to look at this work, which I highly encourage everyone to do, I'm also struck by a tension between the perspective of a child protagonist who suggests, this is just my normal, and the perspective of a mature adult looking back on his life and reflected and ultimately saying, this was not okay.
I 100% agree with that. One thing about the book that impressed me was that Dave, the father, is depicted in ways in which the reader kind of grows to hate and fear along with the rest of the family. But he is also genuinely charming at times. And it's difficult to pull off a three-dimensional character, especially in such a brief work. So you have limited time in which to build such a thorough character. Having such a love-hate relationship with the antagonist is particularly effective in this story because as the family is repeatedly presented with the father as an option in their life and they wonder if he will go down the same dark route with them, the reader has the same conflict of wanting things to be different this time, but then there's also, you know, the very visceral looming threat he presents as well.
Right. Absolutely. I completely agree with that.
I wanted to jump in on that too, because something Irene said really speaks to what I think is special about this book, which is not vilifying anyone. I think one of the things that's noteworthy about the book is how nuanced Dandro presents all the adults. None of them are good, none of them are bad. And all of them are, I think, including Dad Dave, the sort of, you know, closest thing to a villain we could find in the book is treated with compassion. Especially at the beginning, we see that despite his addiction and his mental struggles, his struggles with abuse and violence, he's treated with compassion early. We see him treating young Dandro with a lot of kindness and compassion early on. And also, I think one of the moves that Dandro makes, which is really compassionate towards Dad Dave, is showing his struggle, showing the things that led him, the trauma in his past that led him to the drug abuse as well. He wasn't just this jerk that was behaving violently and aggressively for no reason. He has a troubled and haunted past that he hasn't reconciled, and that's led to the person he is now, which I think really lends itself to what Irene said about how it's sort of the adult Dandro looking back on his childhood. I think that's where we see the adult voice. And moving into some of the secondary characters, I really loved how some of the other adults were presented as kind of safe or as protectors to Dandro, but weren't really sort of, they weren't really flattering depiction. I have a fondness for the way that his grandma is presented. You know, she's flatulent and she's smoking. She's a little bit crude, but she's also like his main protector. It's like a funny moment and they have a clear connection. And there's even a scene in the middle where they have to escape to sort of this distant uncle's house because of the domestic violence. And the uncle is, there's a scene which is so typically childish of Dandro and his siblings seeing the uncle naked because he's a drunk and kind of laughing at that. But despite his own struggles with alcohol, he's not violent. He's safe. He's providing them a safe haven and a safe place to stay. So even though we see all these characters with these sort of deep conflicts and problems, they're presented as nuanced. They're presented with compassion. And we see this real nuance in terms of who's safe and who's not, and kind of when they're safe and what's causing them to be unsafe.
I really appreciate the honesty in this book. I think, you know, it really pulls no punches, and it's just ended in showing all of these characters with complexity and nuance and not kind of putting them into a particular box one way or the other. For me, the most noteworthy part of it, I think, is, as Irene had mentioned, the tension that Dandro establishes between the adult perspective and the child perspective, which is just so artistically done, I think, and it can't be emphasized enough, because you can feel kind of the adult and child perspective in a single panel or a single image kind of at the same time, which is really impressive. The presentation of the mother as a secondary character is really interesting. It's really well done, because overall, I think she is portrayed as this, you know, positive force in his life, but she's not without her own flaws, and he doesn't shy away from acknowledging those, which I think is really well done.
She definitely loves her son. That comes across so much, but the way in which she also uses him totally inadvertently, to some extent, the kids, a pawn between her relationship with Dad Dave, that was one of the more emotionally resonating things for me, I think, was that ultimately this kid, to some degree, had to fend for himself.
Yeah, I totally agree. She's definitely, there's a couple moments where it reads maybe a little bit manipulative in the way that he's being used in their relationship.
We'll have more on King of King Court after this. In most podcasts, you would now be listening to an advertisement. At Sklo Library, though, we have no interest in pushing you a product. We just look to nurture a culturally rich life throughout central Pennsylvania. Being a warehouse of the humanities at Sklo, as we walk the library's factory floor housing our culture's knowledge and aspirations, we bring you our Underwriters from Fiction. Promotional consideration for this week's episode is brought to you by
Jupiter, America's Dairyland.
Now a more vibrant future for the plastic resin-based industry. Gizmotic Institute's proprietary Idiot Control Now promotes science and technology. Take it from Blast Hard Cheese. It stinks! If this strikes you as nonsense, no worries. We invite you to furnish us with your own brand of nonsense. If you have an underwriter from fiction that you would like to see sponsor the show, send your advertisement copy to bdrain@sklolibrary.org. We're back with Alyssa, Irene, Jason, and Colette talking about King of King Court by Travis Dandro. This graphic novel memoir is this year's winner of the Pennsylvania Center for the Book's Lynn Ward Graphic Novel Prize. Are there ways that you find word and image combined in this work to be particularly effective?
I guess I'll start speaking to that. I think we were really impressed with the way that he navigates the combination of word and image. One thing that's notable about this book is that there's no narration, but it's pretty much all through dialogue. So it's very much show, don't tell, this book, which is very artfully done. And I think the lack of like a narration throughout also allows it to be, we kept describing it in the meetings as a very quiet kind of story. And I think that's really true.
I hadn't noticed the lack of narration, but you're absolutely right. And I think that adds a kind of sense of immediacy or intimacy. Like there is not this other layer that's explaining things to us. So the way in which we see it is to put ourselves within the protagonist's eyes.
Yeah, I think I would categorize that as sort of visual exposition, right? There's no, like that goes back to what Colette said about show, don't tell is And I viewed it too as sort of like a zoom in and a zoom out. So we have these specific scenes of action, and then there's no sort of textual reaction to that of kind of here's how anyone felt. Instead, what he does visually, which I think is so cool, is there's kind of several panels, or we'll move from sort of a comic spread to a full page landscape. So he goes from kind of zoomed in on the scene to zoomed out to kind of the broader context, and even some weird sort of existential scenes of like the young Dandro imagining himself floating through the sky, or, you know, someone's playing outside in the yard and they zoom in on the bugs in the yard or something like that. So it kind of shifts from this specific scene, and then it just shows one of the characters kind of sitting there and we're imagining their reaction, or zooming out to kind of the broader landscape context. So these zooms in and zooms out to kind of allow us to fill in the exposition.
I feel as if image in this comic is invited to speak as much as the words that are written, that the characters are, that the characters themselves are saying in a given moment. Every panel speaks, even if there isn't dominated by a word bubble. There's silence that encourages this type of reflection.
One visual that I particularly liked was the way in which the eyes of younger Travis is drawn as these large empty saucers. He is literally wide-eyed and up for anything. It's particularly effective as we encounter all the signs that Dad Dave is not up to the task of fatherhood, that we get this constant signifier of young Travis's innocence and vulnerability. Travis's wide eyes also mirrors visually those of his father's, who is always shown in sunglasses, giving characteristics both similar in some ways, but ultimately the opposite.
That's, I was going to jump in to say, we never see Dad Dave's eyes, right? They're always obscured by the mirrored lenses. You know, yeah. they're always hidden.
Until the end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good call.
Yeah. Yeah. The attention to the eyes for all of the characters, particularly for Dandro, you know, they're very notable. He's the only character who's drawn that way. And then Dad Dave is always drawn with the sunglasses until the end, when we get the first and really only like very detailed drawing of an eye with Dad Dave at the end.
As a memoir that covers Dandro's adolescence, but can also be read in one sitting, the author is particularly judicious with what he presents to the reader. What are some of the more effective metonyms that Dandro uses to paint such a thorough picture of living through a childhood shaped by addiction and abuse?
Early in the graphic novel, you have this moment where Dandro feels very threatened by his father, and so he takes a knife from the kitchen and puts it under his pillow. And this is something he does as a child, right? And for me, that was a representation of him recognizing that his father presents a threat to him, a very real threat, and he needs to protect himself, right? He needs to find some way of having control in a moment where he feels out of control. But this knife recurs later in the novel towards the end, where he is actually standing on the knife's edge of making a choice in becoming exactly like his father, or making a choice to become someone completely different. And I just love the way that this knife pops back up in the work and asks us to constantly confront this question of violence.
On the theme of whether Travis will become like his father, I love the way the basement is used throughout the story. The basement is where his father lifts weights and works out his frustrations on a punching bag. He gets drunk down there and sees some of the ghosts haunting him. It's always drawn very darkly, and there is a scene when Travis is a teenager that his father invites him to hang out in the basement and punch the bag, which I took as an invitation to join his father in his sickness, which Travis thankfully declines.
Dad Dave does always seem to be trying to draw Travis into his form of sort of stress reduction. Like when he at the very beginning, when he buys him the blow up punching bag, and he says, maybe I can teach you some boxing moves and you can use it to beat up Bozo. Going back to Irene's example, without giving too much away and trying to avoid spoilers, I think there's a direct parallel between that scene and some of the ones you're mentioning about how we watch the destructive ways that Dad Dave engages in processing and how he's trying to draw young Travis into that. And I think that directly parallels and kind of sets up that knife's edge moment, that choice in the book of high school age Travis.
I think the sequences in the car are also worth mentioning. They come up a few times. There's a lot of motifs that just keep recurring throughout the graphic novel that I think really helped to get at these ideas in really poignant ways. But the car and the driving sequences, I think, especially do this because there's it's kind of like the knife, where there's an early version as a child where Dad Dave is like letting him drive the car and then uses his son to get out of any consequences with the police officer. And then later on, he buys him a car when he's a teenager and he's driving. And it shows, I think, like just the complicated relationship with Dad Dave on so many levels, because there's the kind of the way that Dad Dave will manipulate or use Travis. And then there's the ways that Travis is seeing this example of this like really toxic masculinity and has to decide whether or not he wants to follow that or not.
Yeah.
It's like a who's behind the wheel moment, right? Who's got the wheel?
Yeah, literally in the first case. Yeah.
He does a nice job of sort of mirroring the beginning and the end with a hopeful scene and a reminder that whatever happened, Dad Dave wasn't all bad. There was this really solid memory of a compassionate moment of him being very fatherly and kind. And it could have ended differently. He could have chosen to leave that part out. It could have ended as a real downer. I think Irene talked about it first, about the reflective gaze of sort of the adult Dandro. This terrible stuff happened to him, but he still remembers that moment. You know, he sees the full picture of Dad Dave.
The ending with him is a flashback of him jumping into the pool with Dad Dave. He says, you know, okay, here I go, 1, 2, 3. And I think it gives the sense that Dandro himself is like, okay, now I'm ready to really look at this honestly and fully and really reflect on it.
So what have I not asked you that I should have?
I've got one. Okay. So one of the things that I'm intrigued by is the role of cartooning and art within this book. I think this memoir, I mean, obviously we've talked about some of the major themes, but there's also sort of the sub theme, which is a great homage to the role of art and drawing and cartooning in Travis's life. So we see that, you know, from an early age, there's that comical scene when he draws a slightly inappropriate picture of his mom and it's exhibited in the school art show, which makes me wonder, like, what was the art teacher thinking and hanging that up, right? But anyway, it's like the place where he gets endearment from adults, right? He's told from that young age, like, oh, this is something he's talented at, and that's kind of his method. And that becomes one of the alternatives. When he arrives at that knife's edge, you know, what's the alternative? Well, he has something to replace it.
Just to build on that, Jason, because as I was listening to you guys talk, I was thinking about, where does Travis's resilience come from? You know, because no one around him is resilient, right? They're all leaning on different substances and practices to get by. And so I think do you think that that's it? Do you think that his art enabled his resilience?
I think so. And I think that's one of the things that, again, going back to our point of Colette mentioned about the show don't tell, that sort of visual exposition, right? I think that's what he's communicating to us. I think if he didn't dedicate this to his mom, he might have dedicated it to drawing.
In being able to put together those fragmented moments of help, I feel like that says something also about why the comics form is appropriate for the story he's telling. It's like in juxtaposing these seemingly isolated moments, it's through that union he's able to create a cohesive narrative. For him as a child, these flashes of adults actually behaving responsibly or being there as a support system allowed him to put together something that could counteract the narrative that he's being offered, the image of the man that he could have become. He said, no, from these few moments, and also from my own interior, you know, sense of self-worth and my willingness to be different, I'm able to draw out a new future.
Interesting.
I think that's really important.
For listeners who may be new to comics, what are some titles or authors that you would recommend?
Okay, so I actually read a lot more manga than US comics. So first of all, I'd have to recommend Full Metal Alchemist by Hiromu Arakawa. It's one of my all-time favorite series. I can say that the story at its heart is about two questions. How far would you go to fix a mistake? And what is the nature of humanity? The story is quite dark, so if anyone wants to read it, proceed with caution. But if we're also talking about English language or more Western comics, I would recommend The Wicked and the Divine series by Kieran Gillen. Kieran Gillen and J.B. McKelvey. I've probably butchered one name. It's a combination of gorgeous artwork and there's gripping storytelling, and it pulls you through every volume. And finally, I would recommend Monstrous by Marjorie Liu and Sana Takeda. I adore the magic and mystery in the series, but what keeps me coming back is a chance to spend time immersed in the artwork. Every single page is a masterpiece.
Some of those titles are available through Sklo Library for free on Hoopla. Each patron gets 6 checkouts a month, and all titles are always available. So folks, check them out.
I'll give a plug for Hoopla. I love Hoopla for comics on my tablet because it does the thing where it zooms in on the panel. You see the whole page and then you zoom in on the panel. So for me, it's a different way of reading comics because sometimes I'll take in the whole page and not really focus on the panel. But I'll follow up Irenae's with 3 recommendations of my own. First, I think we should give a shout to our honor book this year, which was New Kid by Jerry Kraft, which won last year's Newbery Award. So I used to teach middle school English. I taught 8th grade English for 9 years. So I thought this book really captured the middle school experience, as well as really delving it importantly into the sort of sociocultural context of sort of the modern issues around race and schooling, especially in a private school context, in these different layers of race and school, with just an incredible visual style, something that was really self-referential to the style of comics. There were a lot of sort of comic interludes that played off of various comic forms. So New Kid by Jerry Kraft, I think, is definitely worthwhile. And then 2, which I think are sort of backbones of sort of a modern canon of graphic novels, which are Gene Yang, anything by Gene Yang, but I think he's best known for American-born Chinese. But I'm a huge fan of Boxers and Saints, which are 2 different collections showing, or excuse me, 2 different complementary books within the same collection showing different point of views from the Boxer Rebellion. So you really get an idea. 1, I learned a lot about that historical event, which I didn't know much about. And 2, you see that there's both heroes and villains on both sides, depending on the perspective. So again, it goes back to sort of that nuance and perspective. And then also I would mention Marjan Satrapi's Persepolis. So Marjan Satrapi, another sort of, I think it's often shelved as a graphic memoir about her growing up during the Iranian Revolution in late 70s, early 80s. But she's also said that she's taken certain liberties, that it's not strictly a memoir, but it has a lot of truthful elements. That one's definitely sort of must-read graphic novel, I'd say.
Yeah, so I'll add 3 from my list. I think there are so many more that we could just keep on mentioning, but I'll stick to 3. I would say anything by Linda Barry. I absolutely adore her. But particularly my favorite, I think, is 100 Demons, which is kind of like autobiographical, sort of. She calls it autobiofictionography or something like that. I definitely butchered that. And it's kind of does little, each chapter is a so-called demon, and she kind of investigates these poignant moments in her past. And then I would say for the second one, This One Summer by cousins Mariko Tamaki and Jillian Tamaki, which I actually think was a winner of the Lindward Prize a few years ago. But it's so beautiful, and it's a coming of age story that follows this preteen girl named Rose, and at just this one summer that happens and all this family stuff I won't get into, but it's just so beautiful. And and then my third one I would mention would be Nimona by Noelle Stevenson. I just think it, well, first of all, it's hilarious and it's a lot of fun, but it kind of follows this supervillain and his sidekick Nimona, who has these like shape-shifting powers, and it's just so brilliant and so funny, and definitely approachable if you're new to graphic novels and comics.
I'll just mention that a lot of the titles, or not a lot, but I think at least one title that everyone mentioned is reflected, as both Colette and Jason said, in our Lynn Ward list. Boxers and Saints was an honor book in 2014. And as Colette said, that one summer won, I think, in 2017, maybe. So if you're interested in additional recommendations, in addition to the awesome titles that were just shared by our jury, if you just Google Lindward Prize, you'll get to see the whole history of the award. And we link to all of the different titles that have been honored over the past 9 years, since 2011. So it's a great resource for additional awesome reads.
We can put that link in the show notes. So, dear listener, if you're keen for more recommended reads, click the link in the episode's description and it will take you right there. So what's one book of any type that you would recommend to people, no matter what?
Okay. So for me, I'm sorry, I'm stuck between two. Choose what you will. I would recommend Natsuo Kirino's Out, written in 1994 in Japan, translated into English in 2004. It's this gorgeous crime novel gripping with sexism, discrimination against immigrants, labor and inequality, and a lot of other really important themes. It's a book I remember very vividly. And my other recommendation would be Catherine Arden's Winter Night trilogy. I love the first two books, and I'm so eager to read the third one. It takes up Russian folklore and history to create this amazing story of a young girl fighting to save two coexisting worlds as these social, historical, and cultural forces compel her Russia to change. So,
excellent.
Those are my
wow. I'm going to have to check that out.
I would recommend, this was our pact, but it was another book that we got this year, and it didn't win, but it was just really beautifully written and drawn. And basically it's kind of a quest story, fantasy that follows these two boys as they're following these like magic lanterns that end up being all these different things. And just, they get to explore all these different worlds, and it's quirky and it's cute and it's weird and it's fun. By Ryan Andrews. Thank you, Irene.
Yeah, I love that. That's a great recommendation.
To give another plug to public libraries and e-apps, this is one I checked out just a couple weeks ago on Overdrive. So thanks again, public libraries and Overdrive. But I just read Patricia Lockwood's memoir, Priest Daddy, which just blew my mind. So her father was ordained as a Lutheran priest first, which allowed him to marry, and then he converted to Catholicism. So she's in this weird situation where she has a Catholic priest for a father, which is pretty unusual. And then in her early adulthood, she and her husband have a series of circumstances which cause financial hardship, and they have to go back and live in the rectory with her priest daddy and her mom, and kind of relive that. So. Patricia Lockwood is just hilarious. There's so many scenes where I was literally laughing out loud at her descriptions of her family and the different reveals of the ways that they interact. But there's also then just some really, really important subtle critiques, kind of connections between her and her father on mental illness and suicidal ideation. Some really, really scathing critiques of the Catholic Church in the wake of the sexual abuse. Also her own sexual abuse from her past, and kind of how that plays out in kind of this ideology of her family. So really accessible, really fast, funny read, and I think hits on some really important things. She's a poet, so her wordsmithing really comes across in this memoir.
Alyssa, do you have any final thoughts?
We just want to say thank you so much for this opportunity. It is great to really dig deep into Travis Dandreau's work, and we really appreciated your awesome questions. It's fascinating to hear the jury, you know, go deep on what inspired them about this book. And I love the idea of also just asking for other graphic novels that we love. And I'll put in a plug for Hoopla too. It's awesome. We appreciate SCLO providing that for us.
Oh, sure. Well, thanks for joining us. This was great.
Thanks so much, everybody. And
thanks for having us.
Sure. Sure.
Thanks,
Alyssa.
Thanks. Yeah. Our poetry nightcap is from author Catherine Bodie Lang. This is her poem, Mending. I spent that summer tucked behind the library stacks with broken books, repairing bends and tatters, erasing pencil marks, tipping in the missing pages. Old books, weak and torn books, they all came to my table, covers like rags. I undressed them further, remove battered cloth with cuts through the spine and name, down inside joints still holding flapping limbs to well-stitched pages. Once undone, I would fashion a cask, red, green, black, or blue, cut cloth and Bristol board, build a new spine, fasten on the covers with a batch of glue I made that week. The dressing so fitted, I would paint the pages back together, laying tissue over tears, splint the bent covers, slip wax paper under the eyelids of the book. In my windowless room, a ward of old books lay quiet, pinned and drying between bricks and boards. My handwriting later named them, numbered and tagged them, sent them back to metal shelves. This podcast is produced by SCLO Center Region Library. A special thanks to all of our guests for joining us. If you'd like to know more about the Pennsylvania Center for the Book or the Lynn Ward Graphic Novel Prize, follow the links in this episode's description. While you're online, there are many things afoot at SCLO Library. See what all the hubbub's about at sclolibrary.org. That's SCHLOW library.org. I'm Ben Drain, your old friend and erstwhile companion. Take care until we meet again.